time has arrived. We have called the meeting to order. We do have a quorum nearest the map that I use to count people, so. So the first, if somebody would like to make a motion relative to the minutes.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the minutes for February 27th, 2020, which will be approved.
Senator Nelson moved the minutes. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, with that, we're going to move to Representative Freiberg's bill.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move that House File 3387 be referred to the General Register, and I have an amendment as well. If you like, I can move the amendments. Sure. So, yes, I would like to move the A20-0644 amendments. This just puts the bill in the shape I would like. And all it does is change the phrase Autism Awareness Day to Autism Awareness and Acceptance Day.
This gets it in the shape that you're looking for?
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, let's go ahead and describe the bill with the amendment.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I don't know if everybody knows, but I'm an autism parent. I was glad that this bill was brought forward to me. I think it's will help improve recognition of autism. There's a lot of people, you know, around the state who have it, and many people aren't even aware. It's a condition that is not always visible to people. So I'm glad we put in the amendment too. That was a suggestion by the Autism Society of Minnesota. There are some, you know, the one thing I've sort of been learning about this over the last few years. There are some people out there who view autism as a disease that has to be cured, and it's not that at all. It's a developmental condition. So I think having this be autism, having the word acceptance in there, I think is important to me. I'm glad the Autism Society of Minnesota suggested that to me. People with autism, their minds just work in really creative, unique ways, and I think it's just a very cool community, and I'm glad I've gotten to know it better. Maybe I'll just leave it at that. At that point, I do have a few testifiers here.
Okay, go ahead with your testifiers. You introduce yourselves and go ahead with your testimony.
All right. Good morning. My name is Shirley McCork, and my interest in establishing a state Autism Awareness and Acceptance Day stems from being the mother of a son with autism. My son's name is Noah McCork. We all have a need to know that we are valued and accepted. As a Christian person, my worldview says our main value comes from Jesus Christ, but generally speaking, as a state, we show our value for citizens in a variety of different ways. And one basic and fundamental way that we can do this is by dedicating one day of awareness and acceptance and celebration of our citizens with autism. Statistics say that 1 in 42 children in Minnesota have autism spectrum disorder. The huge increase of people with ASD in the last 20 years now see many of these people entering adulthood. One of the biggest mistakes that people who don't know Noah but do know that he has a disability is to think that he is not very intelligent. But anybody who has spent just a couple of minutes with him knows that he is very intelligent. But he does have a disability, and it also doesn't take a real long time to see some of the challenges his disability poses for him and for those around him. We as a state need to, on a basic and fundamental level, send the message that we celebrate the gifts that all people with autism bring to the table, and we recognize the challenges that they face each and every day. We need to join the world in saying we value all people with autism enough to educate and make people in our state of Minnesota aware about autism. It's not on one level a real grand move, but on another level it can be one that sends a grand message to our citizens that on the autism spectrum that they are valued by our government, and it can help educate the rest of our citizens to help them to be better equipped to interact with people with autism.
Representative Freiberg.
just, I don't know if Noah's speaking as well, but from what I understand, today happens to be his birthday. So happy birthday, Noah. I think Representative Tice has a question. I'll leave it to you.
I was thinking we'll finish with the testifiers and then we'll gather them all back together again. So go ahead with your testimony. Give us your name.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Jean Bender. I'm the advocacy co-chair of the Autism Society of Minnesota, what we call AWSOME, and the parent of an autistic adult with multiple disabilities. I'm stepping in today for Jillian Nelson, AWSOME's community resource and policy advocate, and an autistic adult herself. I'm providing copies of Jillian's written testimony, which I'm sure you'll read diligently in appreciation of her keeping her flu to herself. For nearly 50 years, the Autism Society of Minnesota has been committed to improving the lives of individuals with autism and their family members. We welcome Minnesota to join us in this commitment. Autism is a lifelong neurological condition that impacts the way people experience the world through communication, socialization, and sensory processing. The autistic community ranges from independent individuals, like Jillian and Noah, to others needing much more support, like my son. What all have in common is a desire to be understood, accepted, and appreciated. When I joined AWSOME's board about 8 years ago, the prevalence rate was 1 in 150, according to the CDC studies. Today, it is 1 in 58, and in Minnesota, you heard it's 1 in 42, the second highest prevalence of all states studied. Today, we have an opportunity to tell those 1 in 42 Minnesotans, we see you. Because Autism Awareness Day is not about knowing the statistics. Autism awareness means acceptance. Acceptance of people with autism in our community spaces and accommodations when needed. Autism awareness means appreciation. Appreciation for the unique gifts and talents of every person with autism. My son's delightful sense of humor. Jillian's eloquence and passion. Noah's intelligence and persistence. Joe Freiberg's ability to influence his dad's policy making. This declaration would be a monumental move towards acceptance in our society and a giant step in erasing stigma and creating a more accessible future for the next generations of autistic children and adults. Thank you for your support today.
Are there any other testifiers? Go ahead and give us your name and then continue with testimony.
My name is Noah McCourt, and I'm an autism advocate. Mr. Chair, I'm here to testify in favor of House File 3387. When it comes to autism policy in the state of Minnesota, there's really two aspects to that. The first is raising awareness of what autism is, and the second is learning to accept those differences and the contributions that those differences can have to our society. Both are important. I often say that awareness is sort of like the No Child Left Behind Act of advocacy. Maybe it's a start, but by no means is it a finishing point that we should be satisfied with. It's not until people learn to understand and accept that we can really say the progress has been made for Minnesotans on the autism spectrum. Acceptance comes from a place of understanding. Understanding isn't generated by sound bites and poster children. Understanding takes work, and to accept us, people first need to acknowledge us as individuals that are three-dimensional, growing, developed characters. We're not all the same. We're not a collection of deficits, and acceptance is the ability to see that. Acceptance requires facing that which makes us uncomfortable, thinking about why it makes us uncomfortable, and confronting any sort of prejudice that's at the root of that discomfort. It really takes a conscious effort from everybody to recognize why this makes us uncomfortable. Acceptance says that you are you, and that's pretty awesome. I am me, and that's pretty awesome. Acceptance seeks to meet where we are, to meet people where they are, and those who accept don't see us as projects or as charity cases. Those who accept us don't tolerate us. They embrace us, differences and all. people who are aware also care about us in spite of our quirks and challenges. The people who are accepting, who I know care about me in despite of my quirks and challenges. I wish to live in a world where acceptance is not just the goal, but also the reality. I want to live in a world with someone. I want to live in a world where it can be filled with people who know that I am autistic and that I'm fantastic, not that I have autism and it's a tragedy. I want to live in a world where stimming is just acceptable as smiling, earplugs are acceptable as a normal sight, and AAC devices can be common, and everybody can know how to converse with AAC users. In that world, neurodiversity and autism will be just another way that people are unique, and that everyone will agree that that neurodiversity is part of what makes our world a better place to live. So I would encourage you to support House File 3387.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any other people that would like to testify? State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State, but I'm here as an autism dad. My son, Noah, also Noah, will be six, and ironically, he will be six on April 2nd, which is the very day that this bill proposes to be Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month. Noah has a lot of challenges. He does not speak. I hope someday he will. We're working on it. We've got a great team. But I can say this, that he's going to need a lot of awareness, and he's going to need a lot of acceptance from a lot of us. And so I see this bill as a start, and I think it's a beautiful beginning, and I want to thank Representative Freiberg for his leadership. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Are there anyone else that would like to testify on this bill? If not, Representative Tice, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Freiberg, I'm just wondering if there's a significance to April 2nd, or was it just the day you pulled out?
I'm going to phone a friend on this.
So April 2nd is actually the day that's been designated by the United Nations as Global Autism Day. So that's kind of why we selected it, because it's the day that the rest of the world looks at autism as well. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. McCourt, just thank you for everything you've done. I've learned a lot about autism just knowing you. And hi, Shirley. His mom is my classmate. We graduated together. And I know, right? This is cool. But it was really nice when Noah came up to me and said, hey, my mom graduated with you. And the connections you make and the avenues and the learning that happens because of that is really awesome. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
Any other committee questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of this bill as amended, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Oh, I guess we got technicalities to get rid of here. So.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 3387 as amended be referred to the General Register.
Thank you. Those, all of you, for forgiving my idiosyncrasies. Okay, now we're prepared to vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. The bill is. Representative Nelson, you will be up next.
Welcome to the committee, Chair Nelson. Would you like to move House File 3499 to the State Government Finance Division?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 3499 to be referred to the State Government Finance Committee.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, House File 3499 is this guy, like I said in the previous committee, is deja vu all over again. If you remember last year, we had House File 14, HAVA dollars, Help America Vote Act dollars that came to us that we approved last year. Well, in December, there was new HAVA dollars that came to us from the federal government, and this is just authorizing these dollars to be spent by the Secretary of State. And last year it was $6.5 million. This year's our share of the national dollars is $7.39. And members, with that, I'll turn it over to my testifier, Secretary of State Simon.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. I want to thank you for your time this morning. Happy Super Tuesday, everybody. We are here because of Minnesota Statute 5.30, which was written in response to the Federal Help America Vote Act, or HAVA, of 2002. It was signed into law by then-Governor Pawlenty in May of 2003. I think Representative Nelson is, I think, the only one who was serving at that time. As I scan the committee, I think that's correct. So that same bill, when it was first enacted, also included about $6.5 million of federal funds back in 2003 for then-Secretary Kiffmeyer. There was no drawn-out wait at the legislature for that money. The legislature both enacted this law and gave the money at the same time. I wish I could say the same thing about 2018 and 2019 here in Minnesota. This was not a partisan issue, far from it. The vote off the House floor, if you recall, was 126 votes, so darn near unanimous. I want to call out a few people specifically for their really steadfast and longstanding support. Obviously, Representative Nelson, Representative Freiberg, you, Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, Representative O'Driscoll, Representative Vogel, others, I'm sure I'm missing someone, who have been really really great in terms of understanding that this is not a partisan issue, this issue of election security. So this has never been a partisan issue. It wasn't here in the House. The snag was in the Senate. I won't talk about all the reasons for that, but that's where the snag was. Just to zoom out and step back for a minute, just so we're all operating from the same set of facts, I just want to make a clean record of it. In 2016, Minnesota was one of the 21 states whose election system was targeted by a foreign government. Nothing bad happened. No one got in. That's the good news. But it really did put us and the rest of the country on notice about what the real threat is out there from adversaries, foreign and perhaps domestic. And so Congress realized that this was an ongoing threat, and Congress and the President, and credit is due to both of them, Congress and the President, they provided federal HAVA funds to help the states secure their elections. So we went through this process in 2018. We didn't get authorization in the Senate. We did in the House. It wasn't until the end of the session in 2019 that we got authorization. So we got the money last in the country. We were 50th out of the 50 states. It came July 1st of 2019 after the legislative session, which was some 16, 17 months or so after it was initially enacted. And that has frankly put us behind for 2020. There are things that we can't do this year in time for November that we could have done had we gotten the money when all the other states got their money. So I hope this is the beginning of the process, and I expect it will be. Everyone in this room has been great, Republican, Democrat. I don't expect any problems here in the House. But again, federal intelligence experts, Congress, and the President have acknowledged that this is an issue that's not going away. It's ongoing. And this year, never a better day to talk about it than on Super Tuesday. This year is a particular risk because it's a presidential contest. And I don't need to tell anyone in this room that the stakes are high for our country and that any adversaries wanting to sow chaos or introduce doubt into our system would probably choose this election, not a midterm, but this election, just as they attempted to do in 2016. So as you heard from Chair Nelson, the amount of money this year is $7.4 million. And the match this time that was required, some of you may recall last time the match was a 5% match. This time the federal government is saying it's a 20% match. I think that's appropriate. I don't know of any other Secretary of State that has objected to that. This is a second batch of money. I think they have every right to expect that states kick in a little bit more this time. So it's very important that we get these funds authorized as soon as possible. Just a quick note, this came up in the last committee. There are rigorous safeguards and rules about how this money is spent. And the language that before you is basically a cut and paste job from the federal statute. This is exactly the purposes for which it is authorized to be used federally. We can't color outside the lines. We can't use it for any project or purpose outside of those categories. And we are rigorously audited by the federal government. There's an agency called the Election Assistance Commission, the EAC, which technically doles out this money. They are and have been and will continue to be doing audits. I'll give you one example. For certain projects, we have to track our time in 15-minute increments. So we have to say that we spent 7 hours and 45 minutes on this project or 6 hours and 15 minutes on that project. And they will audit us. We haven't been dinged so far, but there's always that possibility. And I just want to say to every member, as I said in the last committee stop, you know, your job is oversight. And so If any of you, either in this committee setting or another committee or offline, you or staff, ever want to talk to us about how this money is being spent, even though we're being audited by the federal government, if you have questions, if you have concerns or suggestions, I welcome it. And I don't even have to be in the room. If you want to meet with people in our office and don't want me in the room, that's great. We can do that too. So anytime you want to inspect, ask questions, poke, prod, criticize, that's fine. But the important thing is that we get authorization to use this funds, to use these funds. Some of you might be thinking, well, you just got some money within the last year, and Congress just appropriated it 2 years ago. I think the important thing to remember there is, yeah, so did all the other 49 states. But nevertheless, Congress and the President have seen fit to give us this second batch of money because they realize, as we do, that the kind of solutions this is going to take, and I know Representative Nash knows this firsthand because of his day job, but many of you also, and Representative Bonner, many others in this room know that this is expensive stuff. So the federal government will come in regularly, the intelligence community, and they will do testing on us. They will basically try to hack us, which is a good thing. And they will issue a report. They will look for weak spots and soft spots, and they will issue recommendations. And what they recommend is really expensive. Hardware, software, people, other solutions that cost a lot of money. So I really do appreciate the leadership of the President and Congress on this issue. They understand that. They aren't just in the business of swooping in, telling us to spend a bunch of money, and then not providing any money. They understand this, and they understand that these are long-term projects. You can't flip on a light switch. These take a long time to get up and running. And so that's why the money is so critical, and it's critical that this authorization be done this year. One thing I want to note, because it came up in the last committee, this particular bill does not include the match. There are reasons for that having to do with this current budget. We don't even know if there's going to be a budget, a supplemental budget of any kind. And it's important for me to just say for the record, members, that under the federal rules that gave us this money, we are allowed to spend the underlying funds, the 7.4, before we get the match. We have 2 years to secure the match, so that would be late 2021. So there's another legislative session to do it. We hope for the match. We've asked the governor to include it in his supplemental budget, which has not yet been released, of course. We're hopeful that he will do that, and we're hopeful that the legislature will follow suit. But we wouldn't want to hold the underlying money hostage to the possibility of a match. So that's why this doesn't include the match. Obviously, we would like that, but we want to have authorization as quickly as possible for this money so we can get going as soon as possible on the projects we need to keep our already safe system even safer. Thank you, members of staff, for questions.
Thank you, Secretary Simon. Is there anyone who would like to testify on House File 3499? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to member discussion. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Nelson and Mr. Secretary, for doing this. Firsthand, my day job, this is expensive stuff. And it doesn't get cheaper. It doesn't. People who are hacking us don't take a day off. But a couple questions for the Secretary. Regarding the match, if the match were not to get passed, is there a clawback on the federal funds?
Secretary Simon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, yes, there is a clawback. I'll tell you that in the history of HAVA, going back to 2002, it's never been exercised. There's never been a need for it. I know that the legislature would do the right thing ultimately, but yes, there is a clawback. So if the match isn't provided, the federal government's saying we're going to take the money back. So when we get authorization, it's in our interest not to spend too far out ahead of the match, because that's at least a possibility, not a likelihood, but a possibility.
Representative Nash.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I knew that answer. I just wanted to make sure that we got that on the tape so that if we could maybe send the tape to the slower body, we can make them aware of that. You all have heard me preach, I guess, about the need to take cybersecurity seriously, and I can't stress it enough. Based on what I do in my day job and our company does in their work, traffic doesn't stop, doesn't slow down. They don't take vacations. This is serious stuff, and the ability to sow chaos for either side of the political spectrum should be concerning. And Mr. Secretary, you and I agree that that the people who criticize the utilization of this money, both locally and federally, really don't get it. They just don't get it. And there have been people who have been vocal about this. I believe one of them called it cybersecurity myths. it's just not the case. So the money that we're going to utilize here, Mr. Secretary, what sort of services, tools, and other things would be acquired with the 7.4 and then with the match money? Just to, one, satisfy my daily nerd moment, but also so that people understand what all you're trying to get accomplished and where it's going to get accomplished.
Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nash and members. Let me give a couple examples. I mean, first, generally, I would say the action plan that was formulated with a working group, including you, Representative Nash, and others in this room, is scalable. So part of it is just doing more of what we're already doing. And let me give you one critical and timely example. One of the things that other states advised us to do, I mean, I guess if there's any advantage of being last in the country and getting this money, it's that we got the benefit of other states' experience. We could call up Kentucky or California or whoever and say, okay, what worked and what didn't? What was a sinkhole and what was a really good use of money? And unanimously, the states that had a cyber navigator program said, do that. Meaning, a cyber navigator is someone, and we just hired him in our office, Bill Ekblad, and he's based out of our office, but he is the critical link to helping our teammates, our partners at the counties and cities and townships, all of whom are doing the hard work today. We don't count a single ballot. They do. We don't hire a single election judge. They do. We don't buy and calibrate equipment. They do. So they're the ones who need a lot of help. And this is my opportunity, as some of you have heard me say, but just to make a record of it, there are only 9 out of our 87 counties in Minnesota that have full-time, year-round, election-only personnel. They tend to be the biggest counties. For 78 counties, most of the rest of your counties, what is normal is a person who does elections who also does property taxes, inspections, maybe public housing, maybe ditch and drainage work, maybe other responsibilities as well. And so they're pretty strapped. And having someone in our office that will help them on security and help their IT people on security is really important. Now, we have one to cover 87 counties. Illinois hired 8 of them. And yes, they're a much bigger state, of course. But pro rata, we would have, you know, what, 3 or 4. I don't think we could get 3 or 4, but we could at least get another 1 to help with the workload. So that's one example. Another example has to do with some of the needs of the counties and the cities in terms of just sub-grants and local grants. And the last pot of money, we set aside $1 million for local sub-grants. We're going to need a lot more than that. So we foresee a much larger share of this pot of money as opposed to the last pot going to local governments, to your counties, your cities, your townships, because we know what it's like when some other level of government comes in, as the intelligence folks in Washington do, and go through the process I described earlier, come up with recommendations with big price tags. We don't want to inflict that on other local units of government, come in there and recommend a bunch of stuff and not have any money for it. So we foresee a much larger share of this being for local sub-grants to at least offset the costs of solutions that are required to make the system safe.
Representative Nash?
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and then I'll be done after this. So I serve on the NCSL Cybersecurity Task Force, and at every meeting that we've had, but particularly in this last meeting out in Arizona, it was stressed that this is a priority for states, and it's a priority for states, and as you just mentioned, subordinating units of government, because many of them don't have the skill sets needed to handle some of this. But the thing that I was chided a little bit at the NCSL task force for being the last state to get this thing done. I think you mentioned Kentucky, Mr. Secretary, in your comments. I'll just let you draw conclusions as to when we're falling behind Kentucky and other places. You know, this is an important pot of money to put towards these things. There are people out there who learn how to compromise anything that is involved with the voting process, and it's not difficult to do. So the fact that we're putting money towards this is an important thing. Representative Nelson, thanks for doing this bill. I've just added my name to your bill as well, and hope to get it done. And I will walk over to the Senate and put it possibly in their quavering hands and help them understand that it needs to get done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Any additional member discussion? Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nelson and Mr. Secretary of State. And I want to actually thank Representative Nash for doing an excellent job of laying out the case for this. For those who do not know, we both serve on the Blue Ribbon Commission on IT, and Representative Elkins is a regular attendee to that function as well. And I think that I just want to underscore how important this is to the public, and that as IT professionals, we are united in agreeing on that point, and making sure that we can do absolutely everything we can to have safe and secure elections. And I am really grateful that our friends on the other side of the aisle are as well dedicated to that pursuit. So thank you for bringing this forward, Representative Nelson. And with that, I will conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author and Secretary of State. I'll repeat some of what I said last year, and not try to, try to avoid it disparaging the other body, but some of their concerns might be alleviated if we got rid of, but not limited to, and 110. And also, you might remember last year I had tried to amend so that we would first spend the money on cybersecurity before the other items. That is just a little bit of advice that might make it more palatable to the concerns of the other body. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know if you have any follow-up on that, but I'm sure they will take that into advice, Ranking Member Quam, or into consideration. Any additional member discussion? Okay. Any closing remarks, Representative Nelson?
Well, Mr. Chair, it's just the original money we got from HAVA back in 2002, 2003, when they gave that to us, they said there wasn't going to be any more. They basically, you're on your own. You can do this, and you just make sure you keep it up. Well, then after the last presidential election, when the Russians were caught hacking into our system, and other parties were tried hacking into election systems around the country, it became a national emergency and a national focus of the Trump administration. And he gave us that money last year, or actually 2 years ago that we authorized last year. Then again this year they gave us another pot of money. The national government thinks and the current administration thinks this is important, and it's important to all of us. So we need to pass this and get it on, and we need to hopefully work with the Senate and get them on board to get this passed into the governor's desk.
Okay, thank you. With that, Chair Nelson renews his motion that House File 3499 be referred to the State Government Finance Division. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Member.
Thank you. So, Representative Elkins. So, Representative Elkins has House File 983. And this is going to State Government Finance Division?
I don't think so. unless staff recommends that, because I don't think there's a fiscal impact.
I have that it's going to State Government Finance.
Okay.
I guess if there's an issue with that, we can reconsider on the floor. So just a quick, this bill's been heard a couple times, I think, already in the election subcommittee, so I certainly want to give people an opportunity to speak if they haven't and have something to say that they haven't said before. But, to the extent we can keep it fairly constrained and not rehashing issues that have been worked on in that committee, that would be great. So with that, sure. Representative Elkins.
Yeah, I'll just start off by moving that we refer this bill, pass this bill, and refer it to the committee, State Government Finance Committee.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Representative Elkins. Oh, okay. Yes, just a second. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong bill. my mistake. So I think we need to move to adopt the subcommittee report, actually, as well, which is in our packet.
Okay. So moved.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Mm-hmm.
So we're good? Okay. So it's been moved. We've adopted the subcommittee report. Please present your bill, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill basically allows statutory cities and other municipalities, school boards, counties to, by their own local choice, adopt ranked choice voting in their local elections. Charter cities in Minnesota are already able to run their elections using ranked choice voting, and so far Minneapolis, St. Paul, and St. Louis Park are doing so. As you can see from the letters of support in the package, there are a number of other cities that are very interested in doing this. The bill also standardizes the counting methodology and the ballot design, which would make it easier to automate the vote counting process, which would be administrative simplification for all of the cities that are choose to adopt ranked choice voting at the local level.
Thank you, Representative Elkins, and you have a testifier. Would you please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Feiberg, members of the committee. My name is Jean Massey, and I am the Executive Director of Fair Vote Minnesota, a nonprofit and statewide organization that promotes electoral reform that promotes more competitive and representative elections. I'm also an election judge outside of today because of the hearing, but normally I do preside as an election judge. I have spoken with thousands of Minnesotans about ranked choice voting and how it can improve local elections, making them more efficient with outcomes reflecting broad support from winning candidates. Over the past few years, interest in ranked choice voting has expanded dramatically across our state and the country. Recent cities to use or soon use ranked choice are Payson and Vineyard, Utah, and New York City. Alaska is poised to adopt ranked choice voting statewide this year. Local officials and voters in many parts of the state are reaching out to us to learn about how to adopt ranked choice voting in Minnesota. They've been inspired by the success of the system in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and most recently in St. Louis Park, and they're asking, why can't we do it here? Cities like Rochester, Red Wing, Bloomington, Minnetonka, they're all in different stages of exploring ranked choice voting. Others wish to consider it, but as Representative Elkins said, they cannot because they do not have home rule authority. This bill would provide them with that opportunity. The bill would also standardize the rules around ballot design and other implementation procedures, which is especially important for cities that hold elections in even years, even those with home rule cities, because they hold elections concurrently with state and federal elections, and that complicates the matter for them. Several jurisdictions, including Otter Tail County, the City of Red Wing, City of Melrose, the Hopkins School District, and just last night, the City of Rochester, passed resolutions of support for this bill, and those resolutions should be in your packet of testimonies. I'm here to provide you with a bit of firsthand knowledge from Fair Vote Minnesota's experience with helping to implement ranked choice voting at the local level in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and recently in St. Louis Park. Since that time, more than 400,000 ballots have been cast to determine winners in nearly 90 municipal races. So we have some experience here now in Minnesota. In 2017, the system was used to elect mayors in Minneapolis and St. Paul in a variety of elections in Minneapolis with great success. In fact, the effective ballot rate was 99.96%. That's astonishing and something to celebrate regardless of the voting system used. According to an Edison Research exit poll and election data, last year in St. Louis Park, the newest city to use ranked choice voting, 92% of ranked choice voting first-time voters said that the system was simple to use. And that is very consistent when we poll voters for the first time using ranked choice voting. Nearly 60% said they preferred ranked choice over the old system. And 64% of voters ranked at least two choices in the competitive at-large race where a second round of counting was required to determine the winner, meaning their votes mattered all the way through, and the candidate stood with 51% of all ballots cast in the final round. Similar results in St. Paul. Turnout was double over the last council cycle in 15. In two of the council races that went to a runoff, the candidates who won had a majority of initial ballots cast, again demonstrating the success of voters ranking their ballots. Ranked choice voting is also widely credited in fostering civil campaigns in these elections. Voters are understanding how to use ranked choice voting, and they like it. Poll after poll consistently shows that ranked choice voting is simple to use, not just here in Minnesota, but in places around the country, including several southern states that use ranked choice voting successfully for military and overseas voting. In fact, by requiring voters to show up only once to the polls and allowing them to genuinely rank their preferences, it simplifies the voting process, especially for older voters and those who have children or find it difficult to come out twice to vote. It should be noted that the process has been straightforward for administrators to implement and for candidates to use. While election officials had concerns going into the process, those worries were quickly put to rest once the system was put in place and successfully implemented. We urge the committee to take into consideration all of the data demonstrating voter competence with ranked choice voting and the preference for the system, as well as the data showing successful administrative experience with ranked choice voting. This bill, which has important bipartisan support, provides local jurisdictions the choice and control to decide for themselves if ranked choice voting is best for them and offers proven implementation guidelines to jurisdictions to ensure efficient and consistent use of ranked choice voting. Thank you for this opportunity to testify and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Massey. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill? Okay. Seeing none, we will go to, sure. My apologies. Welcome to the committee. Third time, please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. Just briefly, this bill has been around for quite a while, some members know, and I certainly understand that there are members here who don't like ranked choice voting and are going to be hard sells on whether it's good or not. But I just ask members to allow cities who do like it, whose residents like it, whose leaders like it, to try it. If they don't like it, they can ditch it. If they do like it, they can keep it. It's not binding on anyone else. But it seems to make sense to get rid of this sort of two-track approach where one class of cities gets to do it without legislative permission and another class of cities, as of today, has to come to the legislature on bended knee and ask for a special bill in order to do it. This would clear that up and allow all cities to at least experiment with it and decide for themselves whether they like ranked choice voting. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, member discussion. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, just to clear up the ambiguity about sending the state government finance, we're hearing preliminary numbers. There's going to be a cost to this, and that's why when we get we'll pass it on from there. But we're hearing there's going to be a cost to it.
Okay.
That's why we have to send it there.
Thank you for the clarification.
Mr. Chair, I'm puzzled by that. I don't see where the cost would be. It's purely optional for local governments. There's no cost to the state whatsoever.
I don't understand it either, but we're hearing preliminary.
We can get clarification on that. I think somebody's in the Secretary of State's office is coming down. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Chair members, Sam Bonowitz, Office of the Secretary of State. There is a potential for costs associated with this. Our office regularly engages in rulemaking, but in the event that we weren't planning on doing rulemaking, then there would be costs associated with the rulemaking.
Thank you. Representative Elkins.
So what would the rulemaking involve? Because the bill doesn't call for a rulemaking.
Ms. Bonowitz.
Chair, members, the rulemaking would involve likely certification of the new equipment for ranked choice voting.
Okay. Thank you. And, you know, so we'll, I'm sure Chair Nelson will give this bill its due diligence. So I appreciate that. So, and then if it turns out there isn't a cost, we can reconsider it on the floor too. Okay. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would hope that with a plethora of entities engaging in this at times complex looking, that there'd be sufficient oversight and attempts to advise, counsel, and assist in the implementation of this, and therefore I would assume that there'd be hours accumulating. I'm sure the quantity is small, but a person should not be surprised that our election system would want to ensure integrity and assist in avoiding issues that might come up from a municipality gaining this.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Any additional member discussion? Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Elkins?
Just an observation, and then I'll repeat the motion, but there's a whole bunch of people who voted early in the presidential primaries that are occurring today who are now feeling that their votes are wasted because they early voted for a candidate who has since dropped out of the race. And if ranked choice voting were in place and these people had had a chance to rank their primary choices, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, those people votes would not be have been wasted. So with that, I'll move that we repeat the motion that we refer House File 983 to the State Government Finance Committee.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Elkins renews his motion. Mm-hmm. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion carries. Okay. Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Lilly. You have House File 3732. I understand this is going to the Labor Committee. Would you like to move House File 3732, Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move that House File 3732.
Go to the Labor Committee?
Goes to the Labor Committee.
Sure. Referred, I suppose.
Referred
is maybe
to the
a
Labor
formal Committee. Word. Representative Quam, to this motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm assuming this is not inconsequential quantities of funds, and therefore I assume state government finance probably would hear this at some point. I just was trying to get clarification and confirmation.
Yes,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lilly.
To the question, yes, the journey will take it to Chair Nelson's committee on the next step of its journey before getting to the House floor.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. So with that, I guess please present your bill, Chair Lilly.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3732 ratifies contracts and compensation plans for many state employees. These contracts are for the 2021 biennium and would go retroactively back to July 1st, 2019. There's changes in the insurance benefits, and there's quite a few of our state employees that are affected by this. There's going to be other contracts that are ratified that they're working on that'll catch up to this bill, is my understanding. But this, if you look just quickly through it, and I'll let Mr. Hubinger get deeper involved with the real questions, but Subdivision 1 affects about 15,000 of our public employees, clerical and office, technical, healthcare workers, craft and labor. Subsection 2 is about 15,000 workers in the state and are working in various capacities around the state. Subsection 3 is radio communication workers, about 57 workers that are working in those areas. Middle management, subsection 4, about 3,200 employees. And subsection 5 is going to Minnesota State, and there's about 788 employees in that section. Inner faculty in subsection 6, about 3,100 employees. Subsection 7, correction workers, about 1,900 correctional workers in state prisons. And subsection 8, residential schools, so maybe the deaf and blind, Purpose Center, and also corrections. Subsection 9 is Minnesota State faculty, about 4,100 employees. And then on towards the back, Subdivision 1 is administrator's plan, and about 566 employees, rather, excuse me for the error there. But if you have some deep questions, there's changes in some of the insurance benefits, and there's some efforts in these contracts to encourage workers' retention and along those lines. And so it affects many of our important workers in the state that are implementing the work that we do here as legislators and serving the people of Minnesota. So there's, I guess we'll stand. If you want Mr. Hubinger to go in depth, he's the real pro.
Did you? Welcome to the committee. If you have any remarks, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission and the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. Representative Lilly has already done a pretty good overview of what's in the contracts. The insurance provisions are a major component of those contracts. There weren't any major changes in the plan design, but there were substantial increases in some of the out-of-pocket costs for deductibles and co-pays and co-insurance. The major compensation increases that were provided in the contracts are fairly similar across the contracts. There is a 2.25% increase across the board that was effective July 1st of 2019. There's a 2.5% increase across the board for salaries on effective July 1st of 2020. And then the contracts also continue performance-based increases, also known as step increases, that are based on performance. Those vary by contracts between 2.75% and 3.5%. Only employees who are not at the maximum of their salary ranges are eligible for those increases. They vary, as I said, across the contracts. The total costs of the contracts represent an increase of about 4.8% in this biennium. And when you annualize those increases across the two-year period, they will have an impact of about 8.29% on the next biennium. I would be happy to answer any questions. There are staff here from MMB and Minnesota State if you have detailed questions about any individual contract.
Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 3732? Okay, seeing none, I have a couple members who's asked to speak. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Hubinger, do we have any other outstanding contracts that might get added into this as it goes through the process that are close to being settled?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, the Minnesota Nurses Association settled late last week. That contract is in the process of being ratified. There are also some compensation plans that are being submitted. Also, the contract with the state engineers has settled as well. We expect to get that in the next couple of weeks.
Representative Nelson.
So, Mr. Chair, so Mr. Hubinger, would those then be added to this, or would they come through as a separate bill?
Representative Lilly shaking his head.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, as I mentioned in my introductory remarks, we're planning to move them in as it moves through the process. So I wanted to bring it attention to the members now. And as these contracts come, you know, we're hoping that they'll get reviewed by members of the legislature and added in.
All right. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about the actual process about how you are. I know that you are doing negotiating to get to this point. But one of the things that I'm concerned about is the fact that sometimes it seems the state, our state employees' salaries are not competitive with some of the other governments. So when you're doing the negotiating, are you making comparisons to other entities, or is it just doing what the state can bear?
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, the Minnesota Management Budget, which negotiates this contract on behalf of the state with the unions, has a lot of data about what other public employers and private employers are paying, and they know that they need to be competitive. That has to be balanced with the state's ability to pay. So there is some give and take there. Someone from MMB is here if you'd like to go into more detail about that question.
Okay. Representative Mason?
That'll be fine. I can get the other information offline. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now we're sending this to, you said labor?
I believe so, yes.
Because I've got a text here that says it doesn't need to go to labor, but I think we can check into that before it gets to the floor. And if we have to, we can deal with that.
It's just some random text from some person?
It's from Ape.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, just a quick comment to that. The chair of the Labor Committee asked to see it, and I'm not certain why or what the Labor Committee chair does serve on the Subcommittee of Employee Relations, so I think I was trying to add respect to that position, given that with myself. We have a bipartisan authorship. Another member is on the committee and signed on as we have a mixture. Representative O'Neill is also on. But anyways.
Mr. Chair, Nelson, we give great latitude to chairs who ask for to see bills, and so I guess that's an answer to the question. The chair wanted to see it.
Okay, fair enough. Any additional member discussion? Oh, Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering kind of still kind of how the process works here. You mentioned MMB negotiates the contract, so I was wondering if the public employee, if they actually engage directly with the agencies in any negotiation, or does MMB take care of that fully?
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and Representative, the management team includes representatives from the agencies that are involved in that particular contract. So for human services workers, there are staff from managers from the Department of Human Services. So it is a broadly representative management team.
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned in the process some wins for the employees. I was wondering if there's an outcome that the state feels like that they came out ahead in negotiations.
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a good question. The state is really having to work hard to compete for employees like every other employer now, and there are some incentives that they negotiated in this contract to be able to have referrals, referral incentives and that sort of thing that help them fill their employment needs. That's just one example. Again, someone from MMB might be able to answer that question more fully.
Representative Heinrich.
That's all right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lehman.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Playing off of Representative Heinrich's question, I had the same question. This usually a negotiation is a win-win, hopefully, situation. And so we're hearing on the employee side that there's a pretty significant win of more than 8.25% increase over the biennium, correct? And that's what I'm hearing, yeah. So in other words, this is probably more of a statement. If we didn't, as the legislature, appropriate any additional funds for any new programs, the cost of government will go up by 8.29% over the next biennium. I think people need to understand that the people cost is what's driving the increased cost of government. And I know we need to be competitive with the private sector, but there's some other advantages in being a state employee as well. I was one for 8 years and am now. So I guess my concern is when I meet with higher ed administrators, they say we're kind of bound by seat contracts and they just keep going up and we can't control our costs and so on. So one of the things you mentioned is that insurance costs or the out-of-pocket costs were reduced. That's a biggie. But you also said that there was some retention incentives. Could you talk about what those are, the retention incentives?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lehman, a couple of points. There is no appropriation tied to this ratification bill. Agencies are required to pay for the costs of the increases in this biennium through the appropriations they already have. You're absolutely right in pointing out that there is a larger impact on the next biennium, and the governor will and the legislature will have to figure out how to pay for those increased costs. The second question about the incentives, a couple of the contracts provide incentives for employees that refer other colleagues and friends for positions in state government as a way to attract new candidates. There are also incentives for being for some contract to provide for school loan repayments in hard to fill positions such as nurses, for example, and as a way to retain and attract candidates for state positions.
Okay.
Representative Lehman?
Just one follow-up question. So my understanding, what you just said, is that state agencies need to come up with the funds, so they need to build these funds into their budget. So is that ever a concern? Do they have the money?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lehman, the agencies have consistently maintained that they can afford these contracts within their existing appropriations.
Okay. Representative Lehman?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any Representative Lilly?
Mr. Chair, I don't know your timeline, but it might be nice to hear from, because there's been a couple questions regards to MMB. If they were to just come up for a few seconds and just kind of say, but if that fits into your...
Is there somebody here who could do that?
Just...
Yeah, we do have one more bill, so if you could keep it fairly short. But we're ahead of where I thought we'd be, so... welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kristen Batson. I'm the Acting Deputy Commissioner of Enterprise Human Capital at MMB.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dory Leland, I'm the Enterprise Director for Employee Classification and Compensation.
Okay. Well, please proceed.
Well, there have been a couple questions about items that were special in this round of bargaining that might be of interest to the committee. So our Director of Compensation will highlight just a couple of those that we negotiated to be a more attractive employer and do a better job of recruiting employees in a tight labor market.
Sure. Ms. Leland.
Thank you. So as MMB was preparing to go into negotiations, we have lots of employee data about what we pay our employees and where those costs are going. One thing that was a particular concern to MMB was the cost of overtime. Just for our largest contracts, MAPE and AFSCME, we spent $82 million in overtime over the last biennium, and so that's over and above what the just baseline costs were. And so a lot of that had to do with some of the challenges that we have in recruiting and retaining, particularly in our direct care facilities and in some of our harder to fill positions. And so some of the incentives that we negotiated into MAPE and to MMA and to some of our other contracts to deal with those issues include a recruiting incentive of up to $5,000 for certain hard to fill positions, a referral incentive for employees that successfully refer employees into those hard to fill positions. And we also negotiated some language for student loan repayment for agencies that see that as a good way to attract and retain in certain positions where student loan reimbursement would be helpful. All of those incentives are discretionary with the agency. They don't have to offer them, but for those that think that it would be useful in their context for their particular positions, those are available for agencies to offer.
Thank you. Thank you for the additional information. Is there any additional member discussion? Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Lilly?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for the MMB for coming up, and Mr. Hubinger, your efforts. And you know, we're blessed with a great workforce, and, you know, implementing what we do as legislators, but they're out serving our public and the people of Minnesota and doing a good job. And we certainly want to be able to retain and keep a strong workforce. But appreciate you hearing the bill today. And as just to re-clarify, there's going to be other contracts that are coming and they'll catch up. And so please pay attention to those if you may see them in other committees and certainly see them on the House floor. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Lilly. With that, Representative Lilly renews his motion that House File 3732 be referred to the Labor Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you,
Chair Lilly. Ranking Member Quam, you have House File 3119, which I understand is going to the State Government Finance Division. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to move my bill.
Okay. So Representative Quam moves House File 3119 be referred to the State Government Finance Division. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We hear a lot almost every year about government waste. And frankly, our state employees who are closest to the work activity, I think, are the ones that are best to enable us to get rid of some of this, the contentious waste or spend our money better. Frankly, I would like to empower our state employees to do what they do best, be familiar with how to run the government and do their job and service our constituents. And in doing so, if they have a better way, a smarter way of doing it, to do it basically more cost effectively, and they find a way to save some money, that then part of that money, half that money would be put into a special account, and a committee split between management and rank and file, or faculty and administration, would come together, and how could we spend, you know, what do we need to do a better job at our mission? This idea came when I attended a MNSCU faculty union meeting, and they said, you know, it's that time of year again. Who wants to be on the committee to figure out how we spend it before we lose it? And there were grumblings, and so I talked and visited with them, and I said, hey, what if you didn't have to spend it on, find ways to spend it? What if you found ways to not spend, and then half the money goes back to the general fund, but the other half goes to an account where you would have the power to say, you know, if we had this software package, our job would be so much easier. If we had this model of equipment, our job would be, it'd be easier for us, we'd be able to do a better job, and it'd be more efficient, and everybody would win. So in that discussion, I came up with this bill that basically says, we're empowering you, our state workers, to use your wisdom to save money where we can, and then have the empowerment of helping to choose the tools and some of the spending so you can do your job better, because you're closest to that work. And that is the intent behind this bill. Now, it's got an expiration, so that we go back and look and how can we make it better, and also to prevent somebody from, you know, gaming the system. But the intent in this effort is to help energize the people that really could help make this government run better. And that's our state employees that are doing that work. And I'm available for questions.
Sure. Thank you, Ranking Member Quam. Is there anyone who would like to testify on House File 3119? Okay. Seeing none, are there member questions? Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Quam, it's my understanding is we did have a similar program that expired, and it's, if I'm reading this right, it wasn't actually used very much. Do you have any comments on that?
Thank you. Member Quam.
Yes, as a freshman, this was a bill that I brought in, and it was, I think, Chapter 24 that first year. And when I would say a couple terms ago, when state government finance was chaired by Representative Anderson, and we were looking at some of the continuous improvement and some of the other programs that were being done, which tended to dominate, and we saw that there was not much utilization of this, and frankly, I was disappointed. But part of the reason I put in the expiration was, let's go look back at it, and I am very open to better implementing a way. But I really want our employees to think about, well, first of all, they're probably already, because the people I've talked to are already thinking about how, you know, boy, we could do this or that better. But I want them to know that we listen to them, we value their judgment, and we want to empower them to make government better. In private sector, there's a lot of suggestion box type activities. And actually, great things happen when you listen to the workers and their ideas. And I wanted to try and bring that to state government. And that's my intent.
Okay. Representative Mason?
Well, I do agree that each agency should have an account where they can, they shouldn't have to lose everything or be forced to spend. I mean, that to me is just plain stupid. But the fact that it didn't work before, I guess I'm concerned about that one, is why it didn't work before. Thank you.
Representative Quam?
Thank you. And I'm not sure why it wasn't utilized to a greater extent. I do know that this seemed to not be a partisan issue. I think between the House and the Senate, there were maybe 5 to 7 people that did not vote for this bill. And if we have a way of making this better, hey, let's sit down and talk. But, you know, frankly, you hear about, you know, on all sides, how to make government better. And this would try and give some of that power from the legislature. We can't know everything. We aren't familiar with everything. To be able to disseminate some of that power. And a worker that feels like they're being listened to and that they might be able to actually make a difference in their job, I think that helps morale and it helps the customer, it helps everyone. And that's the intent that is behind this bill.
Thank you. Is there additional member discussion? Representative Heinrich, then so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Quam, just to expand on Representative Mason's question a little bit, I am interested in maybe your opinion of why the program wasn't utilized more. I guess, was it utilized at all by any agency? And if so, who did use it? Are there any changes to this that you've made thus far? I appreciate the innovative idea in your intent here. I think that's great. I am concerned why no state agency used it, or maybe somebody did, and just wondering what the outcome was there for those that did choose to use it.
I do have a notation here that there was one applicant for it, but Representative Quam.
Yeah, it was within MMB. A lot of effort when I got into state government finance a few terms ago, a lot of effort was put into continuous improvement and similar related programs. And I think that's where a great deal of focus was. So, yes, it was only utilized by one, but I don't think there's a great deal of cost to this. And I would like to, offer for the next three bienniums this opportunity again. And maybe there will be better success. Maybe there can be better communication. But I have not given up on our state workers.
Representative Heinrich?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep, thank you. Vice Chair Sauk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you discussed the concept and or efficacy with employees or an employee or a manager of employees? I'm thinking if right now we are, this is probably the least discussion I've heard on many things. And I think that if the idea does generate some interest, that might be a place where that interest would come in and then probably also could help and assist in formulating what would be an effective idea.
Ranking Member Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, I have discussed this with, in fact, it came from discussions with MNSCU faculty. And later discussions when a member of faculty said, I don't know where the cost pressures and all the money spending in higher ed is going. It's not going to our salaries, so you know, we should look at trying to do things better. And, you know, if you're saying I should, you know, this passes, I should go start visiting, you know, SEIU and MAPE and the other, and frankly, I think that's a good idea. And meet with them and tell them, you know, we here's some power.
And I, by no means was I trying to tell you what to do or how to, you know, formulate the bill, because I think the bill in its basic sense is something that everybody could understand and should find some desire to do. But I'm just struck by the fact that we're not generating much of a push toward. There are two paths we can do. One is that we could just take a pause on this bill right now as it is and just say, is there going to be dialogue and can we generate dialogue to actually have this thing have some legs? Or is it just an idea that, although it sounds good, it just doesn't move forward? So I'm not sure where one would go seek and find out the ideas, but I'm just asking in general, who was all included in your formulation? And you've already answered that. So,
thank you. And I know this will have at least one more committee stop. It's heading to the State Government Finance Division. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Quam. First of all, as some of you may know, I am an Agile practitioner, and part of that is really focused on how we do better in terms of process improvement, how we do things more quickly and efficiently, et cetera. And so, of course, whenever we talk about things like innovation, I certainly applaud that idea. So that is really interesting. There were two really questions that I had, and I'm curious, and I think it gets a little bit to what Representative Sauk indicated. I'm curious about why more folks didn't use it, if there was a communication issue or how we could better engage with some of the agencies to perhaps get more folks to take us up on the offer, because I agree that spending money just to spend money is not a good plan, as Representative Mason said. So my first question is, one, is there any ability to do communication or sort of shop this around to some of the agencies to get input on how to make it better? And then the second question is, do we have any idea how much money we saved versus how much it cost to administer the program? I realize we're not a finance committee, but if you know that information, I'm curious.
Representative Quam.
Thank you. And the previous Representative Lilly's bill had a list of entities that I would talk to instead of the agencies. Those entities, you know, with the different working groups and having them know. I think that other catchphrase approaches, you know, continuous improvement, et cetera, that have high visibility are out there. I think that sucked a lot of the oxygen out of, you know, the efforts. As to cost, I'm trying to remember what the fiscal might have been. I think it was pretty nominal if there was fiscal, that, you know, the first time through. I haven't seen any fiscal come forward. I believe if one of our members sitting here requested a note, it'd be generated. But I think the magnitude is a few hundred thousand dollars went back into the general fund, and a few hundred thousand dollars was put into an account. And it's pretty common business that we've got, you know, accounts sitting around in that accounting. So I'm assuming it falls into an existing type activity. It's just how many, you know, minutes or hours you put to, you know, looking at that account.
Is MMB still here?
Yes, they are.
Oh, okay, I don't know if they have, can provide any additional information too. Please identify yourself once more for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alicia Cowell, and I am a team leader in the budget division at MMB. I have a little bit of information. I wasn't around when the SAVVY program was implemented, but what I heard anecdotally from staff at MMB and from agencies is that SAVVY wasn't utilized because of competing the Odyssey fund. If you're familiar with that, the information technology account at Minute, where agencies have operational dollar savings, there's the opportunity to transfer it to a special revenue account for that funding to carry forward to be used on information technology projects that create additional government efficiencies. And so, whereas the SAVVY program would only allow agencies to carry forward 50% of the savings, the Odyssey Fund would allow them to carry forward 100%. So that was a competing program that agencies considered. The other piece of information that we heard was where there were innovations and efficiencies that generated cost savings, many times agencies would redirect that savings to other operational pressures and spend it before the end of the biennium. So sometimes there weren't savings available at the end of the biennium. I think to answer the other question, there was one project the Department of Administration put forward, or one savings proposal. They generated $150,000 worth of savings from conducting lean Kaizen process improvement events, as well as HR programming to focus on hiring at the entry level for vacant positions. So they identified $150,000 worth of savings that was verified, and then they transferred 50% of that, so $75,000, and that was used to continue the lean Kaizen training for state employees and creating webinars and things of that nature.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Cowell. Representative Bonner?
Thank you. I appreciate that. One just last note, and this is a, you know, obviously, Representative Kwam, I applaud the idea. One thing that might be an option, too, is to consider whether or not some of this language might be something that could be meshed with some of that work from the Odyssey Fund, which looks like it might be a slightly more attractive program that some of the folks are using. But I do think there is some good ideas in this bill that I applaud, and I would be hopeful that maybe those could be somehow worked together with the Odyssey Fund to get more folks to actually take advantage.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kwam. And last year in our state government finance omnibus bill, we had language, or we tried to have language in there, because the Department of Administration, and I don't know if it was this fund, but there was a fund that former Chair Anderson used to talk about, and they needed some tweaks to it, and we couldn't get those tweaks passed to make the program work. And what it did similar to this is trying coming up with savings and award, make awards to employees that come up with those savings ideas, but we couldn't get the tweaks to make the program work. So hopefully this going forward, if we do pass this going forward, if we do implement this, we do it in a way that it can work with the Department of Admin, with MMB, with all the departments in the state, so that they can use it and it's useful. Because if we can come up with ways to save money, and I know in my past when I did work in the public for a public agency, we came up with ideas that save money all the time. And it was just a matter of, some of it was by saving the money, we were able to stretch our budgets and get the work done that we need to get done instead of running out of money. So it's I applaud this idea, but we just want to make sure whatever we set up that it works and it doesn't come bogged down and not do what it's supposed to, what you're attempting to have it do.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Chair Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This goes back a few years, but I was talking to a state employee, and he was telling me that his department outsourced a project. It didn't work, and then he had to go in and fix it, but he was not supposed to tell anybody that he was doing the work that the private resource was doing. And so the reason I'm bringing this up is because I like your idea of actually going to the workers to get some input into what's happening, because sometimes things don't get followed up from the bottom to the top of the chain. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Mason. Seeing no additional members on the list, do you have any closing remarks, Ranking Member Kwan?
No, I enjoyed the discussion and hope some of that energy can come join in the effort to improve the wording and you know, do another pass at helping to invigorate our employees. And I would then renew my motion.
Okay. Representative Kwan renews his motion that House File 3119 be referred to the State Government Finance Division. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. And I think that is the end of our agenda. So with that, we are adjourned.